Thanks for tuning in to San Gabriel Valley Q's very first episode as we start our podcast. We start today with Hans Tallman, who facilitated our very first coffee break of this year. We talked about components of student engagement and digital tools that we can use with students for that engagement. We sit down with Hans and discuss how the morning went. We also have two more coffee breaks coming up this year. Vicki Sedgwick will be scratching our itch with Scratch coding on February 25th. Christine Pinto, who does amazing stuff with her TK2 students, will be with us to share on April 22nd. So go to sgvcue.org, sgvcue.org, for more information and to register for those coffee breaks. Now enjoy our very first episode with Hans Tallman. Welcome to San Gabriel Valley QCast, where we offer direction with technology and education, providing opportunities for learning through our annual event, coffee breaks, and meetups with the San Gabriel Valley community. This is episode number one, our very first episode, so we will see how it goes. And today we are here with Hans Tallman, who led our first coffee break for this year this morning. So welcome, Hans, and thank you for leading us with tools so we can with student engagement. And we're going to get into that soon. So welcome, and we also have Jose, our board members here, Katie Warren and April Biggie here. My name is Jason Seliskar. And so we kind of had this talk this morning, Hans. But first of all, who's Hans Tallman? Who's this guy behind student engagement?
Thanks so much for having me, Jason. So great to be here with you guys, and so great to work with some of your teachers today. My name is Hans Tallman. I'm the Educational Technology Integration Coach for the Richland School District in Shafter, California. I live in Bakersfield with my wife, Elena, and our five-month-old son, Jonas, Luke. And so I was fortunate enough for them to let me get away today. And I've taught third grade for 10 years, and this is my third year as a technology coach. And part of my growth has included some coaching from Alice Keeler. That's been a big part of my learning, and also my connection with hashtag TosaChat, my online professional learning network. They've been really super inspiring for me to support my teachers. And that's pretty much it with me. And then as far as the elements of student engagement, Alice referred me to a piece of research, and I'm going to pull this up right now. It's by Jim Parson and Leah Taylor, and it's an article called Improving Student Engagement from 2011. And it just talks about some of their research on what are the common elements of engaging students to keep them, you know, interested and motivated to learn, and just creating that optimum environment. So that's kind of what we looked at today.
Yeah, and you shared some awesome tools of how we keep that engagement, because engagement's pretty key in our classrooms to get students involved and actively going in their learning and using these tools to do that. One of them is interaction. What are some things that kind of help with that component of student engagement with interaction?
I think the big idea with interaction is having a class atmosphere of respectful relationships and a collaborative culture. So, and that's a hard thing to do, because a lot of teachers require control for their classroom management model, and that sometimes can hinder those meaningful, positive relationships. And sometimes it looks more like kind of a dictatorship where you have your people in line and they're doing what you're supposed to do and, you know, just kind of following directions, yes sir type of thing. So so having that as the basis, I don't know, what do you guys think? What's been your experience with interacting with students and developing that type of culture?
I think it's really important for my first graders to first come into school and then get that chance to bond and know each other. Sometimes we jump into class and it's like, okay, lesson one, and we forget that we need to become a community. So they need to learn a little bit about each other's backgrounds, you know, just have that time to share different things in order to go forward on that path of learning where they're willing to take risks with each other. So if we don't have that laid down as the foundation, then it's hard to get them to take those risks.
Right.
And in that style, that dictatorship type teaching, you have so many kids who aren't going to participate because they're too afraid to raise their hand. So, you know, getting them to collaborate, it's, you know, you get more out of the kids in your class.
Right. And sometimes the kids who, you know, who want to do what you say will do what you say and only do what you say. So, and that really limits their collaboration and critical thinking and creativity because they're waiting for you to tell them what to do.
Yeah, because that's also a mind shift only for teachers, but students as well, because for so long, mm-hmm. it's been kind of the sit and get type model, and we're trying to move away from that as far as our PD goes as well, you know, getting hands-on and getting students to be actively getting hands-on with their learning too. So exploration, which is another component of your components of student engagement. Getting students to explore and kind of, we're talking about the interaction, part of that is exploration, so.
Right, and today we talked about a ton of Google apps that you can use to explore where the exploration is driven by inquiry and it's based on problems, real world problems. And we talked about how, you know, in the 20th century, the source of knowledge was the teacher because they went to a university and has that knowledge and skill set, and they are distributing that information to their students, and that's how students got knowledge in the past. And fortunately, teachers don't have to bear the weight of that responsibility anymore. Instead, we're not sages on the stages, we're guides on the sides. So we're kind of curating a path for students to get to the knowledge they need to get to, which is online now. That's the source of knowledge now.
You kind of touched on that during your coffee break this morning, is getting kids to explore, getting them to get hands-on and kind of grapple with the tools and the information. It's kind of, teachers are kind of like setting that model, I guess, not in that mindset of model, which is good teaching, having that model concept. But I was talking to a teacher who's starting to code, and because you said students are pretty savvy these days, so being able to model and then letting them go and let them explore, show them like three features and they'll find the other seven in the tool. And so, but feeling like we probably give ourselves permission to kind of let go and not have to show them all 10 features.
Right.
You know, so like my students that I've been interacting with coding is, here's a couple things. Now here's, go find some other things that you can be creative in your coding project. So allowing kids some freedom to kind of be creative and explore through the information that they need to explore through, and using the tools to share that learning.
Right.
So
what about the rest of you? How have you kind of helped your kids explore their learning?
I think with talking to the teachers at my school, it's basically tell them introduce and then get out of the way, because mm-hmm. they're gonna explore and they're gonna find things that you as a teacher have no idea, or didn't know any idea about it, and you're gonna learn from the kids too. So
right.
I'm working with a teacher who is not particularly tech savvy, but wants to provide as much as she can for her students. So we started last year with a Google Classroom, a single Google Classroom. This teacher has taken Google Classroom almost to the nth degree as this year. The student, she probably has, I don't know, 9 to 12 different classrooms for one class. So as groups of students ask for information on a subject, she creates a classroom, adds those students into that classroom. And so each student in her classroom has a different number of classrooms that they can venture into all under her auspices.
That's interesting. Differentiation, right, on kind of a digital scale.
Correct. One of the groups or one of the classrooms, she calls it her Tech 8 or Tech Savvy Kids. Mm-hmm. They came to her and said, we want to create tutorials so we can teach the other students how to do what we're doing.
That's so cool.
So she had me in and I sat with them with their Chromebooks. We added Screencastify to their Chromebooks. I kind of gave them the basics and they said, what about this? What about this? Sure, try it. Go for it. The next day or that night maybe, I had a shared item from one of her students where the student had created a 2.5 minute Screencastify on how to use Google Forms.
Wow, that's really powerful.
So that was pretty exciting because I just gave them, like Jose said, the very basics, and then they took off with what they wanted to do.
That's so cool. I think that's a common theme that we're seeing with 21st century learners, where I mentioned before, like in the past, they were consuming with technology, and now we're trying to get them to create things with technology. Mm-hmm. So putting that power into their hands can be really, really interesting to see, mm-hmm, what they come up with.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just that helping teachers, and even for you, for us as educators, just in general, just being mindful of that moment where you just need to kind of let them go, you know, just be facilitators.
Yeah. During my coding club, I had a small group, so I felt brave enough to just say, okay, we're going to start an app that I have never opened. Scratch. I had never worked with it. So I said, I can honestly say, I don't know where that is. You have to find it. So that, you know, sometimes a kid asks you a question, and when you hear it enough times, you want to say, well, I'll give you a little hint. But when you just open up something you've never used, you have to say, I don't know. Let's look. Let's find. And so that helped me to kind of get in that mindset. So I think sometimes we have to.
And I think that's really hard for a large number of teachers. That just seems as though, to many, that's too much open-ended possibilities. And when the students say, but how do I do this, if they don't know the answer, that undermines them somehow. And that's the piece that I want to encourage teachers to learn, is how to let go. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's amazing what they're going to learn, but it's also amazing what you're going to learn.
Right.
So it leads us to the next component. Actually, I'd probably talk about 3 and 4, relevancy and multimedia. So relevancy, and how does that tie to try to combine these multimedia? You were sharing with us how we can use these online tools, multimedia, videos that are already made on YouTube to engage students and to have them learn. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, even just as teachers, when we're learning something new, we need it to be relevant to us, or otherwise, what's the point? So we need to think about what's relevant to these students and to their future, and let's focus on that. So when you think about your students, ask yourself, what is relevant to elementary and middle school students? What are they thinking about? What are they learning about? What are they into? And I know the summer of 2016, we talked about Pokemon Go, and that was like a crazy phenomenon. And you go to local parks and it's like flooded with all sorts of people. And I got kind of sucked into the phenomenon myself. I got my Pokemon Go on my phone, and I was out, you know, looking for Pokemon with the rest of them. And
I resisted, so I didn't.
I mean,
and it actually was fun.
Was it?
It is fun.
And it got the kids up off the couch.
Yes.
My daughter said anything that's going to get my kids up and out the door, because she was stunned. One of the kids said, oh, I got to go walk to the park because there's a Pokemon there I've got to get.
Right. And I remember one night I was out at a park, and it was, you know, no parking at this park, which is normally, you know, not very popular. But I was walking around, and just this random, he must have been in third or fourth grader, he came up to me and he said, oh, hey, you should really go over there because there's this very unusual Pokemon. I'm like, really? Tell me about that. And he just wouldn't stop talking. And how many times in our class where we struggle to just get a complete sentence out of our students? What if we can utilize what our kids are interested in and use that as a hook to bring them to content? What if we could do that? So talking about Pokemon Go and Minecraft and social media.
Just with Snapchat and now Instagram stories.
Right.
You know, you can go into that digital storytelling realm with your students using the platform, the social media platform that they're using to be social, and have them engaged in what you're doing in your classroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. What about the rest of you guys? How do you keep it relevant with multimedia?
I don't know if I do enough. I tell a lot of stories or ask them about whatever movies they're watching, but when you're showing us those different videos, what struck me was the way that they could solicit different emotion from me. And I was like, wow, we can really have a deep conversation or a humorous conversation afterward, depending on, you know, just the music in the background and all the imagery can just kind of get them to that place to have an important conversation like we've been having with, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. Day and different things that we've been doing. But how about a powerful video to start that off?
Right.
That's an excellent.
And as educators, you know, we constantly have, you know, Common Core standards in mind, and that's really what drives our instruction. But on the same hand, you can take a video and provide a context of conversation on a particular topic that engages your students, and then you hook in those standards and, well, how can we ask a question about that, or how can we provide details about that subject? So there's ways to include that. And today I talked about a really powerful resource that's created by Lisa Highfill. Shout out to Lisa. I'm like a big fan of Lisa. She knows because anyways, so if our listeners want to check this out, check out bit.ly/teachingwithYouTube. I'm going to say that again so you can write it down or type it in. bit.ly/teachingwithYouTube. And that's Lisa Highfill's sequence of strategies to find a video, playlist it, pair it, and package it. Really powerful ideas, and I would just encourage all teachers to look into that and see if you can make learning relevant with your students.
So we'll post that link on our website, sgvcue.org.
Great.
sgvcue.org. We'll post that on our website for everyone to take a look at. So moving into feedback. Feedback is important, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So feedback, and there's a lot of tools. You shared Kahoot. You shared GoFormative.
Clickers.
Mm-hmm. Research shows that immediate feedback, the faster the feedback, the better for our students. So feedback is pretty important.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Ideally, our instruction is driven by feedback. Like, we get the feedback, and then we base our instruction off of that feedback. But so many times it's difficult because kids are testing constantly with all of the state standards and the SBAC and preparing for that and benchmarks. And I just really feel for teachers nowadays and students because there's just so much testing. If only there was a way to get that information that we need in an engaging way, mm-hmm. like to engage our students, to give them feedback and to receive feedback from them that informs our instruction. And we did talk about a lot of tools. I mean, Google Apps for Education, or now G Suite, is like every tool that they have. It seems like they have a way to get feedback from your students. So Google Forms, Kahoot, even Twitter, Padlet, Slides, Plickers. There's just so many. And I think one of the favorite apps of the participants today was Google Classroom. That's a great way to get immediate feedback from and to your students. What about the rest of you guys? What's great for feedback?
Well, I think having students responsible for their own growth, knowing where they're at and where they need to get to, gives them a better chance to be better, to be a better student,
right.
to be better in school, be more engaged with the teacher having that conversation. It just makes for a better community in the classroom and in the school.
Setting those goals.
Right.
Right.
And just using tools, like I said, we did Kahoot or even in just Docs where you have the comment feature.
Right.
Little things like that where students are writing, you give a little comment on the side and they can look at that comment and you don't have that. I always say, as an elementary teacher, I don't have that big long line around my desk anymore because they're waiting for me to look at their paper.
I remember that line.
And Johnny, and you got to like tell Johnny to stop, you know, touching, you know, Joey and stop hitting him because, and then
they have to stop working and wait for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So then you're working in the class management. So, but no, it was fun, you know, doing that with students because work wasn't interrupted. You gave them good feedback and they were allowed to, it was instant and they were allowed to continue on with their work.
Right.
Using features like that. So.
Mm-hmm. I have a low tech sort of a way. Right now with my firsties, they have like a data binder and it's just a paper and they can track, you know, their scores and they can track what, how many sight words they learn and they color them in and there's
great.
Little gamification a little bit of it. But I wonder if I could digitize it and make it more automatic.
Sure.
But at least they have at least they have that ability to see, look, this is where I am. I need to get 10 more to get to that next step. Mm-hmm. There should be a way to tie it into.
And I mean, I think there's something meaningful. Like, I think when it comes to choosing technology to integrate, sometimes you just got to use the right tool for the right job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a piece of paper and crayons are the right tools.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It doesn't all have to be, you know, tech integration. And I mean, if you're doing a handwritten notebook or if they're doing art or whatever on paper, that's awesome. One way to share that is they take a picture, you know, and put it into like a slide deck and just to have a record, a digital record of that, mm-hmm. of that learning. Mm-hmm. But I mean, teachers, we got to use the right tools for the right job. And sometimes I know we talked about the SAMR model, but I know Alice and I, we came up with a new letter to add to that, OSAMR, which sometimes tech integration can be an obstruction. So sometimes tech doesn't necessarily need to be integrated into that particular task. Sometimes just handwritten notes are the most effective for, you know, retaining information. So I think that's something to consider.
So the right tool for the right job.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of tools out there that teachers can use in their classroom. How does one choose the right tool, do you think? Because there's so many out there. Because I'm going to share your slide deck with my teachers at my school, and there's a lot on there. And I'm going to have a conversation with them like, okay, you don't have to use Kahoot with this, this, and this. You can just use Kahoot and get familiar with that. So how do you like ease that for teachers as far as the overwhelmingness of tools that are out there?
There's so many, and you can be overwhelmed and like swamped and like so, like super confused, like a tech confusion type of thing from all the tools. But I know in my district and many other districts, we're Google Apps for Education or G Suite for Education, and so we have a great supply or a suite of apps from Google. But for our beginning teachers, we need to trim those apps down to an essential 3 or 4. And so I know Steve Johnson of Rise and Converge, which is a blog, riseandconverge.com, I think, possibly, or find him on Twitter, Rise and Converge. In Panama Buena Vista School District in Bakersfield, he's trying to help his teacher focus on 4 Google apps, which are Google Drive, Google Docs, Google Slides, Google Classroom. If we can just hang out with those and create a culture of common terminology and common knowledge and skills with those 4 apps and go as deep as we can with those 4 apps, then the teachers will have the skills and the ability to decide and look at other apps and decide, well, will this fit the right tool for the right job? Or can I use one of these basic 4s to get that done? Because for every task, there's a tool. But if you can find a tool, one of those 4, to accomplish multiple tasks, then you can drill deeper with that knowledge and skill set.
So what is your favorite tool?
Oh my gosh. How could you ask that? Honestly,
I couldn't tell you a favorite tool.
Right.
I have so many that I love to use.
Yeah, so it kind of goes back to the right tool for the right job.
Correct.
I'm going to tell you right now, there's a tool I've been stuck on forever, and I think I'm going to use it for the rest of my life. And it's so basic and simple, and it's like, is that really, does that count once I say it? But the Chrome browser. Mm-hmm. The Chrome browser, how we access the internet, how we access other tools. Just being able to sign in with your Google Apps for account and have it sync all of your bookmarks and your history and your passwords, just that alone, that's where I start all of my teachers off. Well, are you signed into the Chrome browser? Look at the top of the top left corner. Is there a little person with no face? Well, that means you're not signed in. Click on that guy and sign into your Chrome account. So teachers out there, get to know your Chrome. What about the rest of you? Favorite tool?
Right now, I am working with teachers that I use weekly is Google Forms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just to get information back from myself. I'm
so powerful. So,
yes, I just attended, shout out to Alice Chen, one of her workshops, and just incredible. Just things that I'm going crazy this last week, just going over the stuff that she showed us that I'd never seen or heard of. So for me right now, it changes all the time, of course. Right now it's Google Forms for me.
I was working with a teacher this week who did like a bullying project where she sent out her seventh graders to observe bullying on the playground over 3 days. They filled out a paper chart. They recorded, you know, who was saying what and when did it happen and what kind of name calling it was. They're focusing on name calling. And then she put them on a Google form, collected this data, and she was astounded at the amount of name-calling and bullying that was happening at her junior high. And she was going to take that and look at the summary of responses and bring it to the principal and assistant principal and have a conversation. What does this mean? Why is it that the majority of types of name-calling is under the category of joking? A lot of kids think it's okay to name-call someone as long as it's a joke. Oh, I was just joking. So you can really utilize these tools to have meaningful feedback and have great conversations that could potentially impact your district and kids' lives.
We had a great coffee break that Brent Coley did last year on
Shout out Brent Coley.
Yeah, Brent. just Google Forms.
Man, you could live there.
And what you can do with them. It was eye-opening. It was amazing.
I created a Google site off his hub that he introduced for our teachers. That was excellent.
It was. I'm not going to limit it to a favorite, but one of the ones that I'm learning, and I emphasize learning, is Google Drawing, which intimidated me in the beginning. But one of the teachers asked me about creating a storyboard or having the kids create a comic strip. So I was trying to figure out how to create the storyboard for that. And I took basically a template for a storyboard like you can get on off the internet, only I converted it into Google Drawings. So each box is an individual Google Drawing. So in the document that the kids have, there's 6 boxes for drawing and 6 boxes for text under the drawing. And each one is a click and edit or a double click and edit, and they go in and create the drawing for that.
Very cool.
It's actually worked out really well.
Really?
And I think the kids really like it because they don't have to go in and create that storyboard because I did that work for them.
Right.
But they go in and create the story within that board.
Right.
So that's been a real learning experience for me.
That's cool.
I guess maybe Google Sites has been really powerful this year because I was able to build a site for the parents, and then I can just use Translate, and it's in English and Spanish, and give them some insight into what's happening in the classroom. I wanted to kind of make like a kid's portfolio or blog on there, but that hasn't happened this year. But, you know, you can always say, I'm building for next year or, you know, the end of the year. and eventually get there. So that's been a great tool. But I don't know if I would just say my smartphone, because, you know, maybe a couple of years ago you'd be like, I would not be caught dead with my smartphone out in my classroom. But now it's like, well, I'm taking pictures of the kids. I'm, you know, airplaying for them, and they're using it, or they're saying, can I borrow your phone so we can take a picture of this? And I say, do you know the iPad does that too? So I don't know. Just having the smartphone has changed a lot for me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. How many personnel handbooks have been written in there that we don't use our cell phones, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. In our school districts. Yeah. So, but for me, kind of getting transforming my computer lab into a maker space lab innovation type area where kids kind of explore and get hands on, is Google Build, where they can go online, build with online Legos, and then kind of lead it. I just bought 4,500 Lego pieces so they can actually physically do it, but also kind of build that prototype before they build in the Google Build website. So I think Google Build, the kids love it. They were just like, again, one of those opportunities like you mentioned earlier, that getting them to share with each other.
Right.
Getting students to share. So it's like lighting that fire where you show one kid Google Build, next thing you know, he's sharing to another student. And then that's two students kind of builds on, because that happened a couple weeks ago where I showed one student, next thing you know, well, what are you doing? I want to do that. So next thing you know, there was five kids in the lab doing Google Build.
It's almost like it's just natural for them to share their learning. When they're engaged, they just do it naturally. No one has to tell them, you know, share with your partner. It's just going to happen if they're engaged.
Absolutely.
And buildwithchrome.com.
Buildwithchrome, yep.
Yeah.
.com, yep.
That's very cool.
So so I think that's kind of covers it for this episode. Hans, thank you again for coming out to our coffee break. Lots of tools that we shared, lots of ways we can use that, and how do we engage our students, and also how we as educators are engaged, you know, in our professional learning network. And you mentioned Twitter and the being able to go on Twitter and connect with other educators that are on Twitter. So I've been on Twitter. This is my 9th anniversary of being on Twitter, I guess.
Wow.
The reason I know what I know and share is because amazing educators like all of us here, being able to share in that professional learning network, that PLN,
right,
and keeping each other sharp and just sharing and being able to be innovators or early adopters. And so Twitter has been a great tool. If we're going to go back to tools, has been a great tool for me as an educator to grow. So
I know Twitter has been like the main learning experience of my career since I've been on, and I think I've only been on like, this is year 3 for me maybe. And those of you who are on Twitter, if you want to see some of our learning from today, go to #EngageWGoogle and you'll be able to see some of our learning that we're sharing. And if you're interested in the slides with these elements of engagement and the tools we've talked about today, you can go to bit.ly/ let me make sure I'm giving you the correct one.
We can have it on the website at sgvcu.org too as well. So
yeah,
it'll be available to everyone there as well.
So look for that posting, bit.ly/engageslides2017.
And what's your Twitter handle?
So I'm at H Tolman. So you can follow me and yeah.
Yeah. So, April, what's your handle?
I'm at April Biggie, but you'll never know how to spell it. April, BUEGE.
So yeah.
Love to see you on there.
And Katie, you're at?
I'm at Techie Nana.
Yeah, cool.
And Jose?
I'm at Roflip. It's R-H-O-F-L-I-P.
And I am at Jason Seliskar, S-E-L-I-S-K-A-R. So connect with us on Twitter, and we'll interact with you. And again, Hans, thank you for coming out for a coffee break today and sharing. with us. We have other coffee breaks coming up. We have a coffee break in February. Again, information is on our sgvcue.org website. Also in April, we have great opportunity for kindergarten through second grade teachers with Christine Pinto. She does amazing things with her little guys. Google Apps for Education, GAFE for Littles, hashtag. If you follow that on Twitter, you can see some of her work there. So we're pretty excited with our coffee breaks coming up. Hans kind of set the bar for us today. We have nominations that are happening right now. So if you want to join our board and our team, nominations are on the are being accepted on our website right now. If you're going to Q in March, March is coming up pretty quick here. Please sign up for our affiliate meeting. And so, again, thank you for listening to our podcast. Thank you, Hans. Thank you, Katie, Jose, and April. And we'll see you next episode.